Our friends from Healthy Bud just launched a new exciting product, and our dog Zippo has been absolutely obsessed. Their mini training treats are packed with superfoods like lion's mane, reishi, and salmon oil to support brain health. And with over 500 treats per bag and just one calorie per treat, you can rest assured that you're providing guilt-free taste and nutrition in every bite. To grab a bag yourself or a few, head over to us.healthybud.co and use our code FP20 to save 20% on your first order.
Welcome to the Family Puffs Podcast. So today's episode, I read a couple of blog posts, news articles about what dogs actually understand. And it took me really down this wormhole. Do dogs understand us? Do dogs understand what we're saying? And so we really found a group of interesting individuals at ELTE University in Budapest. And today we're going to have a special guest. Her name is Shani Dwar. She's a PhD candidate at the ethology department. And for those that don't know ethology is the study of animal behavior. She is the project manager of the Genius Dog Challenge. That's a great name. So we'll find out what that specifically is, which is part of her research that focuses on understanding basic language-related concepts in family dogs and Minotaur pigs. She completed her master's at the University of Hohenheim in Germany, where she examined the use of honeybees as a means for deterring Asian elephants from crop fields. Interesting. Her earliest childhood memories are of observing animals in admiration. She grew up in a kibbutz in Israel, spending most of her time in the stables. For her, this research is her personal passion, fulfilling her childhood dream of trying to understand dogs.
It's quite an interesting resume already, and I'm so excited to meet her. I have to admit, I've been watching the Genius Dog Challenge. I wasn't able to watch it live as it was happening, but I definitely caught up on all the episodes, and it's been just so fascinating to observe the dogs and how they think, process, and make decisions. So we're going to talk about the Genius Dog Challenge itself during the conversation with Shani anyway, but I do think that it's important work that they're doing. It's very fascinating, and I'm so curious to hear what else she has to share with us when it comes to language, communication, their findings, how much dogs are understanding, how fast and why some dogs are so good at creating associations and learning words more than others. It's just such an interesting topic that it's only just starting. That was my understanding. That previously a lot of research has been done on behavior, but more of wild animals in captivity, whereas dogs are relatively unresearched when it comes to cognition, language, and their understanding of us. Not sure why, but now, since we're obviously moving towards a much more conscious and kind way of researching, research labs are not wanting to have all these animals in captivity just so they can do their studies. And dogs have proven to be the perfect match for research just because they live with us. We can teach them stuff. We can see how they learn and how they communicate, and they love it. So they're not necessarily caught so that they are a research subject. So I think that's really cool.
Yeah, I think if you ask any dog parent today whether their dog understands them, I think most of them will say yes because they say certain things and the dog will react. But to what extent do they understand that? A good example that I read about or learned about recently is the cue sit, right? And so we think we have that down. When we tell our dog sit, the dog sits, right? But what we don't understand sometimes is that a lot of us, if you really look at people saying the word sit to their dog, they kind of lean over their dog. Maybe they do a little hand signal. Maybe they open their eyes kind of like this and they're like, sit. And maybe they even like turn their head a little bit. And it's possible, and we'll discuss that even more, that the dog is reacting to the little head tilt or the leaning forward. And so a good thing to test for some of our listeners at home is try to get your dog to sit when you're laying down. Trying to get your dog to sit when you're not looking at them directly overhead. And maybe you'll see that your dog is maybe understanding sit, but using other cues to understand what you're really, really trying to say. And so,
Yeah, shout out to Ken Ramirez for reminding us of this exercise, which is really cool, and I am planning to test it with Zuppo later on.
welcome to the podcast, Shani Dwar. So before we talk about the intellect of genius dogs, let's talk about the intellect of just regular normal dogs. So many believe, with good reason, that when we speak to our dogs, they understand us. But how much of what we're saying do they actually understand or have the capacity to understand? And how do they actually do that?
So, people, as humans, we tend to use a lot of words to express ourselves. But what we don't notice, even between humans, when humans are communicating with other humans, is that actually a lot of what we are understanding from other humans communicating with us has nothing to do with the words. It has more to do with the body language, the intonation, the movement, our expressions on our face. And of course, when we're communicating with our dogs, we're using all of these things because these are all things that we do unconsciously. And I would say that from what we know, it is mostly on these additional layers of communication that the dogs are picking up. I would actually not say that these are the additional ones. These are like the real ones, and the words come on top. Because the words let us understand, like the do you want the thing on your right or on your left? But the deeper meaning comes from the way we talk, the way we I mean, the intonation and our body language.
Obviously, we use that to understand other people as well. Is your hypothesis that dogs just use a higher percentage of nonverbal understanding to understand us?
Yeah, so I think dogs are mostly relying, and what most of the research shows, that dogs are super good at picking up communication intentions of humans. They're actually much better in this than, for example, chimpanzees. And a lot of other animals, dogs seems to be to really excel in this aspect. And they do it so well that when we're communicating with our dogs, we're like sure that they either read our minds or read the language that we're using because they're that good at picking up on what we want. So even before I tell my dog, let's go for a walk, he is already standing out there. Or the minute I tell him, let's go for a walk, he's running to the door. But what I didn't notice, and I think most owners would be like, yeah, he knows the words, let's go for a walk. What we actually didn't notice is that while we were saying let's go for a walk, we were like starting to put our shoes on, get it like standing up a bit taller. And of course, the dogs can definitely learn the words let's go for a walk. So if I will just be completely still, not move at all, say let's go for a walk, and then get on and start moving and doing whatever I need to, and I repeat this process. Then, by means of, classical normal conditioning, the dog will learn this. But it's most of the cases when we're talking with our dogs and we didn't specifically intentionally train something, and we think that they're picking on what we're saying, they're actually picking on the body language that we're using.
Would you say that talent is innate or learned over many years from living with humans? A good example might be if I'm blind, I might use my other senses a lot more because I lack one. And so the dog might lack the capability to really understand us in terms of language. So they're using all these other things to kind of make up for that. Would you say, is it innate or kind of learned?
I think a lot of, well, there's a lot of conflicting scientific evidence for this, but this is definitely one of the biggest questions. Did the domestication process lead to the dog's excelled ability to understand humans? And I there are evidence on both ways. So if this is something that is specifically canine ability, you would expect that wolves, coyotes, other foxes should be also able to do this. So everyone from the canine family. And if this is something that is a result of domestication, then only dogs should be able to do it. And there are some evidence showing us that dogs seem to be much better at in this than other canines. So I would say part of it is probably innate, because you can also see puppies that are super young, 8 weeks old. They didn't have much experience with humans, and they are still immediately able to communicate with, to understand what humans want them to do. And they also seem to be more like, to be more focused on humans' faces and more readily willing to interact with humans. And this is a huge part of being able to comprehend what humans say.
Yeah, I tend to explain it to my clients, especially in relation to dogs and young children. I work with dogs and toddlers as a part of the services that we offer. So I tend to explain to people that as dogs have been living with us and developed, they really learn to look at us, observe our body language and our behavior, so that they can learn to predict what event follows after each time we do a certain movement or say a certain word. And this can bring that predictability, understanding, and knowledge about us and about their environment, which helps them be more successful. Whereas in relation to young kids, they can be challenged for dogs because they're just so unpredictable. They fall, they scream, they wave their arms in the air, just some examples. And that can be a lot more stressful for a dog, just because they can't make of what is the next thing that this little person is going to do.
Yeah, is it safe or dangerous? Like, I don't know how I'm judging this environment right now.
Yeah, exactly. And I think also a lot of dogs. So most of the humans in the world are adults, and then dogs get really exposed to adults. Dogs get much more exposed to adults and much less to humans. And also kids have less of an inhibitory control, so obviously they have much of a harder time. But what you said, and I think is really interesting, is how this gives the dogs an advantage. And for me, originally I'm a dog trainer, but I'm also now more working as a researcher. And this advantage of dogs to be able to pick on what humans want, this is actually what makes them dogs. So this is what gave them the evolutionary edge, let's say, and why some dogs were bred and some dogs did not breed and did not succeed. And this is how we got such an animal that is so communicative. I worked a bit with pigs and also with a lot of other animals. And it only through working with these animals, then you realize, wow, how much dogs comprehend from our communication and how special they are compared to other animals that might be super smart and pick up really fast on things, but they are not so keen on learning from us. And they're that communicating with humans doesn't come as naturally from my experience to other species that as it comes to dogs.
Yeah, I think that's a great segue to our next question regarding communication and language. So in your blog posts on the Genius Dog Challenge website, you make a distinction between communication and language. So for example, Many people know that a variety of animals can and do indeed communicate with one another, whether it's through sign language, body language, as we talked about, alarm calls, clicking, whistling, mating calls. So our big question is, aren't these animals using language to communicate? And if not, what then is language and how is that different from communication?
Well, when we think of animal communication, we normally go to the most colorful examples like dolphins and birds, but actually everything in the world is communicating. So even, you know, even the cells in our body are communicating chemically with each other. The leaves of the tree are like releasing hormones and stuff like that, communicating. Monocellular organisms are communicating. And the difference, I would say, there's of course a lot of different disciplines that treat language differently, and language to what might be for one expert language is a completely different thing from what another expert would say that language is. But the way the definitions that I adopted, and are probably the more conservative ones, say that language is a means of open communication. So, for example, when I'm talking with you now, we're talking about something completely abstract, and people listening to us are hearing completely abstract ideas about nothing that is happening here or there. So this, we can talk about the future, we can talk about the past, we can endlessly talk about things because I can always make my sentence more and more and more and more and more and more, and more complicated. Yeah. As opposed to animals, that normally their communication is about what's happening at the moment. So at the moment, I am angry. At the moment, I want you to move away from my bone. At the moment, I want you to play with me. These are all things that are, let's focus on what's happening now. And they're mostly communicating their own internal states of mind or emotion to someone externally, and not so much communicating about things that are outside of their own, I would say, their own head or their own their own world.
So are animals able to, and maybe this is a very hard question, are they able to conceive of, let's say, about the past or the future? They're just not able to communicate about the past or the future. Are they able to even conceive of those ideas?
So yes, there's some research showing that dogs definitely remember what happened in the past, and they can remember this under a specific context. This was one of the recent, I think, the most exciting findings of my supervisor, Dr. Claudia Fugazza, that showed that dogs can remember what they were asked to do an hour ago. And this shows that they do have a perception of time, and they also have a memory of what happened when, even if this thing doesn't seem to have a very significant effect or importance at the time that it was done. So they definitely do have a perception of time, but we do not have any evidence to show that they really communicate about this with other animals.
Yeah, to me, it actually happened the other day. That is kind of like, from evolutional standpoint, it makes a lot of sense, but my clients often will tell me, my dog saw a chicken wing on that spot while we were on a walk. And then now every day this week, we have to go to that exact same spot to look for that chicken wing. But that makes sense from, you know, trying to survive an evolutionary standpoint, while they will be remembering the exact locations of things that they've placed in the past, but those things help their survival.
Yeah, that makes so much sense.
Yeah, my dog had, so we used to live in a yard, like in a place with a yard, and he would run a cat up a tree, and then he would come there the day after expecting the cat to be there. So that's kind of a, maybe this is not a very efficient way of remembering things, but on the other hand, when we're going for a walk, and he always remembers where there was a bunch of disgusting rubbish that he wanted to eat. And I would walk there the next day and I would completely forget that it's there. And he will go and he would eat it again. And every time I'm super angry at myself that I did not remember to pull him away from there. So they definitely remember.
Yeah, obviously that rubbish had a bigger impact on your dog than it did on you.
Yeah, well, the smell also very impacted me, but I seem to like try to push these memories away.
Now, an interesting question, maybe when we're getting ready for their walk, are they thinking, oh, it's time for me to go to that smelly spot so I can eat the rubbish? Or it just happens as we approach the spot? I guess we won't know for sure.
Yeah, I think the amazing thing about dog science is that we are progressing, especially in the last 20 years, and the questions, this is a very complicated question to ask from a scientific point of view. How do I construct an experiment that can control for this and can specifically test this question? But I think that we are improving a lot lately, and I'm full of excitement and hope that we will be able to ask more, even more complicated questions soon. So keep your hope up.
That's exciting.
Yeah, so going back to language and communication, so just to clarify, is it your contention that dogs can understand us via our language, or are they just intaking it as mere communication? A good example might be a green ball, and then a language around the green ball might be, I want you to go to the other room and get the green ball that I'm showing you right now and return it to me right now. And so I guess, like, why do dogs even, if dogs do understand language, why do they understand language if they do not even have the capability of using language? Why would that even be evolutionarily advantageous?
Well, I would say that actually they probably do not really understand language the way we understand it. So in this sentence of go to the other room, bring me the green ball, that's a really complicated sentence. And when we will tell the dog this sentence, there's a good chance that the dog will be able to perform the task and come to us and bring us the green ball. But once we start taking the sentence apart and start trying to implement it in different occasions, and this is another one of the features of language, is that you can use it in a flexible manner in different environments. So it's not something that is fixed to this situation. I can tell you the sky is blue here and the sky is blue in, I don't know, in New York, and you will know what it means, okay? But if I tell the dog, go bring me the green ball from the other room, and I'm sitting at my house or in my mother's house, there's a good chance that only in one of these houses he will be able to perform the task. So this gives us a hint that the dog is actually not really understanding the different elements of the sentence. He does understand the whole concept of going and bringing a ball. But where we found, and this was for me a very surprising finding, is that when we start putting other balls, most dogs will not recognize that which ball you're asking. So most people tell me my dog knows the names of toys, but then when we put all the toys together, it seems like the dog is starting to lose confidence and not really sure which of them he is supposed to bring, because again, he knows each of these toys but in a different context. And then it's not so much the specific words, but more understanding the whole context. And this, again, is the principle of communication. So I understand the context of what you want me to do, not really the fine details, which are what language helps us with.
A dog might understand the name of a specific item, but if you ask them, go to the other room and get a ball, are they going to understand that if there's a football, a baseball, a soccer ball in there, does the dog understand that all those things are balls, or are they incapable of understanding that?
So we know that some dogs are able to do this. There are two experiments that show this. So one of them is the very famous Chaser which is the dog that knew over 1,000 toys. And it was proven with her that she knew categories of things. So she knew to understand balls, frisbees, toys, opposed to things that are not toys. And there was also a really nice experiment that was done with one of the dogs from our project, Whiskey, where Claudia showed her a bunch of objects. There was a new frisbee, a new ball, a new rope, and a new ring. And she told her, bring me the ring. And Frisbee never saw any of these objects, but because she played with rings in the past, she was able to bring the new ring. So she does have in her mind this category of rings. And of course, to your original question, the dog can have, if we teach him like baseballs and soccer balls and tennis balls, they can of course learn to, I mean, I assume they will be able to form these categories. But from all the dogs that were tested on this and from all the last 30, 40 years of science, we only have two dogs that can do this. And I think that if this was something that was common and you could have found in all dogs, then it wouldn't be only two. So I would not say based on these two only dogs that could do this, that this is a common ability among dogs. For us to be able to say that these findings are relevant to all dog population, we would need to have this experiment repeated at least with 20 dogs and many, many times in many different locations and places, which is something we don't have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I know we've been talking around it, so we might as well, you know, get an understanding of what the Genius Dog Challenge is, what its goals were, how you became involved with it. I would just love some background about this amazing project that you're involved with.
So, as I said, all these years of science, and we have very little evidence of dogs that are able to learn the names of toys. And when I started my PhD, even a year before that, we were wondering why. Why are they so little dogs that learn the names of objects? Is it related just because people didn't try to teach them, or is it because something in their development that maybe you need to have, like, because I'm sure that all of you that are a bit familiar with dog training, there's a lot of things that always tell you, teach your dog, your puppy when it's young, then it will stick. So maybe if we teach dogs that are young puppies a lot of words, maybe then they would learn. So we were really wondering, how come there are no more, that there are only so few dogs that know the names of objects? So we started by trying to train dogs, and we ended up with 30 dogs that completed the whole process. But actually, I would say we started training more than 50 dogs, and we wanted them to learn the names of only two objects. That's all we wanted. And we did this for 3 months, some dogs continued with us to 6 and even more months, each week working with us, training, trying to learn the names of the toys. And half of these dogs were border collies, which is a breed that is specifically trained to work with humans, was bred for this for many years. They're considered to be very easy to work with, very motivated. And for me personally, that was a very difficult time because we were working, and the dogs did not learn. And we were wondering, so maybe it's something that we're doing wrong, or maybe it's the situation. And then we started finding slowly more and more dogs that owners told us our dogs already know the names of toys. So we started testing these dogs in the same, using the same testing method that we did with our other dogs. And we found that these dogs were amazing in learning the names of toys. So they just picked the new toys up with no problem. And we overall had 6 dogs like this that came to us already knowing the names of toys and just kept learning more and more and more endlessly. And from the dogs that were naive, we had one dog that also showed the same thing. She started the project, she didn't know anything. After 2 months, she learned the names of 21 toys. And if you remember, the dogs that we tried to train, most of them have been training with us for 3 months, 6 months, did not learn the names of 2. She was able to learn 21 in 2 months. So then we realized, okay, there must be something here that is not related to just, that might be a bit different in these dogs. These dogs, the ones that can learn words, we call them gifted dogs or genius dogs. Something in them must be different. But we had a problem because we had only six of them, and it took us even these six took us more than 2 years to find them. And science needs, as I said before, if you want to prove something, you need normally at least 20 dogs. So we need more dogs for this. So we came up with the Genius Dog Challenge in the search for more dogs. And the idea was to combine a scientific experiment and also a social media campaign to try and find more dogs like these dogs, because the owners of these dogs, very funny, had no idea that their dogs were doing something special. So, and that's one of the reasons why it was so difficult to find them. The way we found them was that Claudia, my supervisor, goes around the world and she gives dog seminars. And she will always tell people, I'm searching for dogs that know the names of toys. And normally the owners would have a video meeting with us and be like, yeah, my dog knows the names of toys. But I mean, it's so easy to teach the dog the names of toys. It's so effortless that this must be, I mean, that's nothing special. And only when they started realizing how much work we put in training other dogs to do it, then they were like, okay, so maybe this is special. Maybe it's not something that all the dogs can do. So specifically what we did in the Genius Dog Challenge is that we had these six amazing dogs that come from all over the world. We had the dog from Florida, we have it from Norway, we have from Netherlands, Spain, Brazil, and one from Hungary. And we gave them, in the first stage, we gave them six toys to learn in 1 week. And in the second stage, we gave them 12 toys. Also, all these toys, they need to learn in 1 week. At the end of the week, we did a small challenge. And on our YouTube channel, the Genius Dog Challenge, you can go ahead and check it, where you see how we performed the experiments in live broadcasts. And this was also a bit of my personal passion, because I'm very passionate about dog science, and I want people to be aware of it and to make it accessible for the public. So this was for us an opportunity to let people see how we conduct our experiment live. And we tested the dog and we saw that, of course, they learned. And this also created a big buzz over social media, and more, a lot of newspapers were contacting us. And thankfully, we reached our goal, so we found more dogs. And of course, we're always looking for more genius dogs out there that can continue with us to other experiments that we're always conducting. So does this answer your question? It was a very long answer.
To me, as a dog trainer, it was just so fascinating to observe the dogs. I was focused on the moment when the parent would give the instruction, and we saw some interesting head tilts, and you know, some were just super excited. It was, every dog has its own approach. Some dogs were pretty straightforward onto the toy. Others needed a little more time to sniff around and look and kind of think and process. So just just observing these dogs and the process of decision making and goal completion was just so interesting and fascinating that I think that anyone watching those videos will benefit or will really enjoy it. So do check it out. I do think that it's such a cool project and thing to see, really. So just so we can give our dogs, obviously those dogs are genius in their own way of understanding words, but it just opens up a window of looking at dogs in a different way, because we're so used to seeing them all the time, our dogs. Obviously some people perceive some of their dogs as more smart, some people think that their dogs are more stupid. It's just one different lens of seeing these dogs who are understanding concepts of words and objects and how they perceive it and what their process is of bringing it back. So different work ethic for dogs. That was kind of my highlight of it.
Yeah, definitely. This is so, cognition has a lot of aspects, and we call these dogs geniuses or gifted, but it's really important for me to emphasize that yes, they are very gifted in this aspect, but our dogs are very, all dogs, as I said at the beginning, are amazing in their ability to read humans. And each dog, and I'm not saying this as as lip service, this is true, each dog is really unique and really special in the way that it is able to understand and the different things that it can do. And we have so much to learn from each dog that we encounter. I've met during this project and also before a lot of dogs, and they're all there. From each and every one of them, I've learned something different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I definitely, for those of my clients who think that their dogs are not the brightest, we definitely make sure to discover the things that dogs are bright at, so that we can change that perception. Because as you're mentioning, every dog is unique and they have their special power. So we must find it and treasure it.
We must find it.
Yeah, I always joke that my dog is especially stupid because he tends to do really, really stupid things. Like he would jump off a cliff. He would do things that really, it's not clear how he survived so far. But on the other hand, he has, and this is, well, so I'm not allowed to say this as a scientist, but he really has a good sense of humor. So in this, like, you could really see that he's playing around with you. He has his play face on. And so maybe he's not so good at learning some things, but in other aspects, he has a very strong, I would call it kind of ability to comprehend my signals and understand what I mean from him, what I want, and also to be able to support me in this sense. So even though I say jokingly that he's like not a smart dog, he's definitely very talented in other aspects. And if I say that on my dog, I'm sure all of the other dogs are also true about this.
You know, going back to what dogs understand, so is it possible, and this might be another stupid question, but I love stupid questions. Is it possible that, let's say, at the beginning when we just first encountered dogs and we began to domesticate them, that just like a dog's being able to understand object words is so rare, maybe back then dogs being able to read body language was really rare, and we just selectively breeded in or breeded out some of those things so that eventually most dogs today can understand body language? And then, you know, taking that a step further, that if the Whiskey or these other dogs, if they were just selectively bred and then all the other dogs were, let's say, eliminated, or not, let's just say put into another room, that the majority of dogs then from that point on would be very, very good at learning language. Is that a possibility?
Okay, so I'll go back, because there's a lot of, this question goes through a lot of phases. So I'll start with what you said about the ability of dogs to learn, to understand human body language. And I think actually not only human body language, but all communication from all animals basically is the same principles. So if I'm looking at an angry horse or an angry dog or an angry cat, they all have very similar characteristics. Their body would be tense, their stride would be like a bit jumpy because their muscles are tense, their head would be high or low depending on the type of the aggression that they're showing. And these are things that all animals understand, because obviously if I don't understand that the bear is angry, I'm not going to be here talking with you.
Yeah.
So only the ancestors of me that understood this were able to breed. And I think in some sense, this is also true for, let's say, wolves or dogs. So obviously they all were able to comprehend some element of human language, communication. However, only the ones that lost their fear and also were probably more focused on the human's face and were trying not only to react defensively, but also to understand what the human is wanting, these and communicate back. So communicating back is a huge thing, which you don't see with a lot of other animals. So with wolves, for example, you would not see so much communicating back. Like if they're having a problem, dogs would normally stop, not deal with the problem at all. They're not going to deal with this problem. They're going to look at the human behind them and be like, hey, human, you solve this for me. And wolves would be like, jump in, solve this problem by themselves, not going to be trying to communicate back. So we probably were giving an advantage to animals that communicated back to us. And going many, many, many generations further to what you're saying about the ability of dogs to, the dogs that we're talking about now, the dogs that learn names of objects. I don't know if this is a genetic ability. So there are, as anyone looking at our, on our social media can see, there are a lot of border collies in these groups. And this might be some indication for genetics. However, there are also other dogs. There are, in the literature, there are two Yorkshire Terriers. I encountered one Pekingese, which is not a breed that I would expect, a German Shepherd, two mixed dogs, one a mini Australian Shepherd. So there are a lot of dogs that are not genetically related, and but let's say some of these dogs are not genetically related to border collies. So I don't know. I think it would be very interesting to try and see if there is something genetic about this, meaning that if we breed only these dogs, this would be something that develops. However, if you remember what I was talking about, the evolutionary advantage of dogs that communicate back to us, and you ask maybe why this ability did not develop in other dogs, I think it basically has, other than my scientific interest, very little practicality and gives the dogs very little advantage over other dogs. So for a dog, it doesn't really matter to learn the name of a ball or the name of a frisbee. They're all toys. So it makes some sense that the reason why most dogs cannot do this is because it's just not important for dogs to be able to do it. This has no evolutionary advantage. There is no reason why dogs, I mean, all of the dogs that I've met, they're just normal, happy family dogs. Their owners mostly would not know that there is something special about their dogs if I haven't told them, meaning that these dogs don't have any advantage over other dogs. So unless we do what you said, like only breed these dogs, this probably will not be something that manifests.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's make the distinction then between commands and cues, such as sit down and stay, and learning the names of objects. What we definitely infer is that the learning of objects is so much more rare and so much more an indication of geniusness in dogs. So why is even learning the names of objects that much harder than learning a cue or a command? It seems like similar things. Why is one just considered more genius because it's so much more rare? Is that the only distinction?
Yeah, so I would say first, yes, that it's not, I would not say that this is like, this is, we consider it genius because it is rare. The question, why it is rare, I have no idea. So when we started, as I said, I was like, okay, I'm a dog trainer. You wanted me to train this task. It seems very reasonable, quite easy. I did not expect to fail on this. And of course, you can say maybe I'm not a very good dog trainer, but I know of two other groups that tried to train the same thing and were unsuccessful. So it's not completely clear to us why these dogs are able to do it and why some dogs cannot do it. Why is learning object names more difficult than learning actions? However, as I said before, learning object names is not something very practical. Learning actions is. So it is very, it makes sense that dogs that were able to associate actions with words or with the body of the of anything, any signal from the owner, had an evolutionary advantage over other dogs, because these were the dogs that were easier to work with. So we preferred to breed these dogs. As opposed to dogs that learn object names, this was not very used. So I imagine this could be one explanation. And there could be a lot of linguistic explanations about maybe there are different parts in the brain that are involved, maybe the learning mechanisms are different, maybe actions could be taught with associative learning, whilst dogs are not using associative learning for learning object names. But these are all speculations and things that we don't really have any data to know to answer these questions. These are directions that we're looking into, but we're still far from knowing the answer on this.
Yeah, some of my thoughts are that when we're teaching cues, dogs to perform specific cues, we can really rely on muscle memory, right? So we start and then we repeat it and we build the muscle memory. Where else with the toys and the names of it, we really need to teach the dog to discriminate between items and make the right decision, which overall seems a lot more complicated than the one is move your body, the other one is somehow connect the dots in your brain in order to make the right decision and kind of associate the word to the item versus all the other items. So I guess that's my speculation. Like, it's a lot easier to move the teach the body than the brain, in a way.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think this is a very good way to put it. That I mean, obviously, for the dog, the most thing that has the most importance is the dog's body. So it would make sense for the dog to be able to learn a lot of things and associate things that are connected to its own body and not so much to other entities around him. Yeah. And so I agree with you. This is a really nice way of putting it.
So going back to the challenge a little bit, when you instructed the dog owners to not only train their dog, but the mechanism of how you wanted them to test their dog and being able to know the object names, did you give them a script of, hey, I need you to say, go get this green ball in the other room? Or did you give them some level of freedom? Like, some might have said green ball, or some might have said, go get this green ball in the other room right now and bring it back to me. Was there any sort of criteria in the difference on how you instructed them?
Yeah, so one of the things I find so nice about this is actually we did not give them any instructions. These all are, as I said, they all came to us with their dogs already knowing the names of toys, and each of them had their own way of teaching their dog. And all the dogs, by the way, so most of them speak, all of them speak different languages, because they're all coming from six different countries. So this is another element that all the dogs are used to hearing things a bit differently. And we gave the owners, we told them, whatever you were doing so far seems to be working, so just continue doing what you have been doing so far. And the amazing thing about these dogs is you really don't need to work hard to train them, to teach them the names of toys. So one of our latest studies show that they were able to learn the name of a toy after hearing it only four times. I think that's amazing. I live in Hungary. I seriously know less words in Hungarian than Max, one of the dogs that's from Hungary and is on our project. If you tell me a word in Hungarian four times, there is no chance that I will be able to remember it. No chance at all. These dogs can learn a name after hearing it only four times. So it shows you how intuitive and how free this kind of interaction is. And I find this especially fascinating, because when we teach children language, we don't actually teach them. They learn, they're like a sponge, and they go around and they hear and they learn. And this is kind of what happened with these dogs. So the owners wouldn't actually teach the dogs the names of the toys. We would normally ask them, when did you notice that the dog learned the names of toys? Because it was normally kind of a situation where the owners said the name of a toy and suddenly the dog appeared with this toy, and then they were like, oh, my dog knows the name of this toy. So my dog actually knows the names of toys. One of the dogs, one of the new dogs, has a toy named Butt, and it's like it's literally a butt of a Yorkshire Terrier, and of a Corgi. And the owner was talking with the dog about the dog's own butt, but then the dog left the room and brought the toy named Butt. And then the owner was like, "Oh, my dog knows the name of this toy." So there, we did not use any script or anything because the dogs just kind of pick up on it things by themselves.
Well, let's talk a little bit about you. You know, you mentioned that this project allowed you to fulfill your childhood dream of trying to understand dogs. And so in your own words, why is this work so interesting to you? And more specifically, what discoveries would you love to uncover / prove about how dogs think or learn? Like a good example might be someone who's really interested in space. And they're really interested in space because ultimately they would just love to learn if aliens exist. Is there some kind of holy grail understanding that you would love to get to?
I love this example because actually this is how I feel about dogs. So I remember as a kid looking into a dog's eyes and thinking like, what's going on in there? And this is what I find so intriguing. So I think like, I know there are a lot of people interested in aliens out there, but come on, I don't know much about the dog lying to my feet. So this is like the same for me. It's as fascinating because I feel like I have I think we have started to understand something, but really the tip of the iceberg. There is so much that we can learn about them. And what I especially find fascinating is because our connection with dogs is so strong, because as I said, they seem to be very special as opposed to other animals in their ability to communicate with us, because there are a lot of things that humans and dogs have in common. So the more we learn about them, actually, we learn about ourselves. When we examine the bond that dogs have with their humans and the way they connect with humans, we are also learning about the way that humans are connecting with the dogs. And we're learning what makes us humans while we are learning what makes dogs dogs. So it's from observing these similarities and the differences between us that we understand what makes us unique. And I think this is the most fascinating thing about dogs. So a lot of people, especially because the topic that I'm studying is language, they're really into wanting dogs to understand language. And I think regardless of what dogs understand or do not understand about language, they are so amazing. Their abilities are so complicated. Dogs can understand, like, they can read us much better than we can read ourselves. I think that's, like, that's amazing. That's as amazing as, I mean, that's even more amazing to me than the ability to learn language. So what I would like is just to get a little, every piece of small part of this huge iceberg that I see, I would, and I can kind of try to understand what's going on in their mind. And that's for me fascinating.
I mean, in the course of your research and in the course of you hosting this project, is there an example of something you learned about the human condition through your learning of dogs? Is there something you learned?
I was amazed to see how much people were interested in this. So I was amazed to see how much people love dogs. People that we got a lot of media coverage, and I was completely shocked by how much coverage we got. Things I learned, by the way, were how to answer my phone in the shower and stuff like that. But so these are practical experiences. But it was really amazing to see how these dogs touched people all over the world. And we got some amazing feedback of people because we were doing this during COVID. I mean, we're all still during COVID, but especially under those circumstances, how much other people also appreciate these dogs. Because for me, I mean, I've literally dedicated my life for this, so obviously I think it's interesting, but I was amazed to see how many other people think it's interesting.
Amazing. So if you could just tell our audience, is there a way that they can connect with you, with your project, or anything else that you got going on?
Yeah, so if you are watching us on YouTube, then you're also welcome to have a look at our Genius Dog Challenge YouTube channel, and where we post also, where you can find all the past broadcasts of the experiment and also any future publications that we share with you there as short explanation videos. You can also find us on Instagram at Genius Dog Challenge and Facebook Genius Dog Challenge. That's our page. If you're interested in dog science, then go over, check it out. Because as I said, this is part of my mission to share with you our scientific knowledge about dog training and dog cognition. So we upload there regularly information that would probably you find interesting.
Absolutely. We are fans. We'll keep reading the blog and keep seeing what you... Do you have any project that's coming up that may be similar to what you guys did? Or are you taking a little break after all the hard work?
So, yeah, we can't really... I'm not really in liberty to say anything yet. But do check us out. And if you, by any chance, happen to know a dog that knows names of toys, so definitely, definitely, I'm calling you. Send us an email. You can find me at shanidroar@geniusdogchallenge.com or on our website. Just send us an email or a private message. We would be really happy to hear from you and see maybe your dog is a genius.
Yeah, wonderful. We'll definitely link to all of those amazing links, the show notes and the descriptions. But thank you so much for your time, Shani. This was an interesting conversation for us. Mm-hmm. You know, we just threw the kitchen sink in terms of questions to you, and we just learned so much. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for all the hard work. Thank you for being a guest, or everything that you've done for the science of dog cognition and dog behavior, for uncovering more and more interesting subjects. We'll definitely continue following what you guys do, and maybe we can have another conversation in the future as well.
Looking forward, it was a great pleasure being here.
Just listen to the Family Pups podcast with your hosts Tanya and Charles Lim. Subscribe to our podcast to catch our latest episodes. If you like the show, please make sure to share and review us on your favorite podcast app. And for links to anything we mentioned in the episode, check out our show notes. And don't forget to visit familypups.com/podcast to listen to past episodes of the Family Pups podcast, including episodes on separation anxiety with Melania DeMartini Price, Unpredictable Aggression with Michael Shikashio, Fearful Dogs with Debbie Jacobs, Puppy Socialization with Marge Rogers and Eileen Anderson, and many, many more.